it's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Indeed it does, and great to have you with us on this Monday edition of the show. It'll be the only regular show we do this week. Best of programming throughout the week. Unless there is a monster breaking news story, in which case I will hop in if anything enormous breaks. But it's one of the slowest sports weeks on the calendar. I know the Open Championship is later in the week, but this is going to be our week to kind of reinvigorate ourselves, recharge our batteries, aside from today's show. So just that programming note as we get things started. Brian Twining joins us from Bleacher Nation, our weekly NASCAR spot with him to recap Shane Van Gisbergen, who can only win road courses, but he's won three of them, and he has three wins in NASCAR this year. It's insane. We'll talk about that coming up a little later on. We'll also be joined by our friend Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com because Cooper Flagg is done with NBA Summer League. Summer camp is done. And we'll talk about that with Kurt, who is here in Las Vegas. But we start things out in Major League Baseball, and Sam Yarnell is here. Sam, I watched plenty of baseball this weekend. Didn't like a lot of what I saw from the Yankees as they got beat by the Cubs. And can I just say this? And this isn't even so much like a Yankees thing, for, you know, and that and all that. It, to me, what I watched in the Cubs is what I wish the Yankees would be. A team that plays smart baseball, takes the extra base, is aggressive, more eyeballs than analytics. You know, guys flying around all over the place. Clean baseball. That's what I wish the Yankees would be, is what I saw in the Cubs this weekend. And it's why the Cubs have been so damn good this year, Sam.
Yeah, the Yankees are, they're in a weird spot.
They're meandering. They're just floundering. They're 10 games above 500.
Yeah, but they're 10 games above 500 and falling fast because it seems like every series is exactly what this Cubs series is. They win convincingly in one of the games and then are simply outplayed in the other two. And when Max Fried's pitching like he was on Saturday and you lost 5-2, that's not a great sign, because when you have these teams in these kind of lulls, you look for the days where they're trotting out a star player to try and get correct.
Well, he had a blister. He's got a blister. So, I mean, I'm not going to go crazy about Fried having a blister. He'll be
fine.
He
gave up four runs before the blister developed.
Yeah.
So
he never looked right in that game, though. He never looked right in that game.
But that's kind of the thing, right? Like, this is now, we've entered the not the time portion of the things to go wrong section of the Major League Baseball season. Like, if this was June, sure. Or like late May, great. But we're getting towards the end of July at a famously late All-Star break in 2025. And the Yankees aren't in first place in the division. And quite frankly, they're closer to third place in the division than they are to first place. So yeah, I'm starting to worry about the New York Yankees.
Well, there's still 65 games left in the season. They're going to make moves at the deadline, and we'll obviously see what those moves were. The story that was more impressive to me was the Cubs. I just love the way they play the game. Was very impressed with what I saw out of them this weekend. Yeah, go ahead. You got something.
I was going to, with relation to the NL Central and the Cubs, they are playing incredibly well, and they're still only a game up on the Brewers. Like, I don't think anybody saw the Brewers getting as hot as they have. Granted, a three-game sweep of the Nationals over the weekend will give you a lot of confidence. Not. But the Brewers are playing such good baseball right now, and as good as the Cubs are, I don't know if they've locked up that division comfortably yet. The Brewers are coming, and talk about a team that's getting hot at the right time. Brandon Woodruff has come back, and he's pitching at an all-star level through two starts, right? Freddie Peralta showed you yesterday why that rotation is probably the best in baseball, all things considered, and it's still one of the best bullpens. I'm so beyond impressed with the Milwaukee Brewers. And I think the Cubs are great, but I might take the Brewers to win the Central right now.
Yeah, and real quick, the hottest team in baseball right now is the Red Sox, and who the hell saw this coming? Maybe getting rid of Devers was the right move. They've won 10 in a row now. A great weekend for them as Tampa Bay has kind of hit the skids here and come back down to reality. They've lost 8 of 10, and the Red Sox looking like a team that could certainly be headed for the postseason, at least as a wild card team. We'll see what happens there. Home Run Derby. I wanted to give you a chance here in the final couple of minutes of the segment. We've got the Home Run Derby taking place on Monday night. You've got some bets you'd like to get in. You've got some things you want to talk about. So go ahead and wax poetic about the fun and frivolity that is the Home Run Derby.
All right, I got three bets that center around one player, my favorite player in the Derby, maybe my favorite player in the league right now, Rockville, Maryland's own James Wood. Shout out to everybody watching us on Masson and his neck of the woods. See what I did there?
I did.
I got three bets on James Wood just for the Derby tonight. I think the kid's going to win it. He is a specimen. Ooh. When you talk about a competition like this, it's not just raw power, but he's got a ton of that. It's also, you know, agility and how, oh gosh, what's the word I'm looking for? When you can last a long time while working out. Endurance, that's the word I'm looking for.
Sure.
I think that James Wood has all the tools it takes to win a home run derby. So I'm going to play James Wood to win the thing at 4-1. I think he'll have the highest exit velo. I know that's a market out there,
wow.
The highest exit velo on a homer. So I'm betting James Wood at +230 to have the highest exit velo on a homer. And I'll bet his longest home run prop over 466.5 feet at -112. I think he gets a hold of one and touches it up to 470. Those are my three bets on James Wood. Elsewhere, I think Matt Olson hits the most home runs in the first round, playing in front of his home crowd. He's going to get super hyped up to get out there and make a statement early on in the Derby. It's +650, so it's a little bit of a long shot. Give me Matt Olson to have the most home runs in the first round. And Cal Raleigh not to make the semifinals. I played it at +210. I just don't think the Home Run Derby is built for Cal Raleigh and Big Dumper.
I gotta say, I don't like the number on it because there's just no value in it, but I think longest home run's gonna be O'Neal Cruz at +170. And you talk about exit velo. I mean, I think he might have the highest one this year. He's certainly close. He has been at least the first few years in baseball. He always has one missile that he hits. But I just don't like the number on it, +170. Give me Jazz Chisholm, baby. Give me Jazz. 15-1 to win the whole thing, baby. My ride or die, Jazz Chisholm. Put a few bucks on it. We're coming back. Got a Wimbledon final to get to next. Coming up in 10 minutes, Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com will stop by. Cooper Flagg's NBA Summer League experience is done after a big game over the weekend. Leave on a high note. That's what my mom always said. She actually didn't say that. But I can imagine a mother saying something like that. Sam Yarnell, let's talk about the Wimbledon men's and women's final over the weekend, which I watched both of them in their entirety. And let's start with the men, because that was the final everybody was looking forward to, obviously, with Jannik Sinner and Alcaraz meeting up in the men's final. And a rematch of what we saw at the French Open at Roland Garros. Look, it was a good match. It certainly didn't live up to what we saw at the French Open, and that was simply because Sinner played his A-plus game by and large, and Alcaraz showed up and played, you know, sort of a B-minus performance for him, and that certainly wasn't going to be enough to beat Sinner on this day. The more interesting thing to me is Jannik Sinner was very fortunate in this tournament. Because he beats Grigor Dimitrov. Dimitrov has to retire in the third set in, 2-2, up two sets to love, is going to win that match. Then he gets Djokovic in the semis when Djokovic is playing on one leg. I mean, let's be honest about it. Sinner wins his first Wimbledon, but there has to be some context to how he got to Alcaraz in the final, where granted he played fantastic, but we've got to put some context around how he even got there.
I think that we have to put context around more than just how he got there. So tennis is entering a very dangerous position, era, because now we've had a tournament where the winner on the men's and women's side both had been caught doping, right? You have two champions who are both, you know, fairly openly at this point using steroids. And I know the video went viral during the Sinner Djokovic match this time at this Wimbledon of a few years ago when Djokovic, you know, just walked all over him at the US Open, obviously before Sinner started juicing. I think that tennis is going to have to get their stuff together, and they're going to have to do it quickly, because if anyone saw anything online last night, nobody was happy about how this tournament ended on either side. I think a lot of people found it unacceptable that a tournament, especially with the pedigree and history that a tournament like Wimbledon does, allowed both of these players to not only compete, but go on and win their championships in the midst of both of their doping scandals.
Well, Sinner got hit, but I mean, Sinner got whacked. Sinner served a suspension for his transgressions, as they may be. So, I mean, I don't know. How long was he supposed to be suspended, considering what the explanation was around why he was caught using what he used?
It seems like he's insinuated, or the assumption in the tennis world, as I understand it, is that he's continued using and just doesn't get tested for it anymore. And because he was already popped, he's somewhat immunized from being popped for it again. So again, it's the Barry Bonds thing, right? It's eventually, right? Barry Bonds did not retire from Major League Baseball, right? Barry Bonds was playing at the peak, not his peak, because his peak was ungodly, right? But Barry Bonds was performing well above league average, beyond what people would, you know, expect in their lineup at the end of his career. His contract wasn't renewed around Major League Baseball. He wasn't offered a contract, even for the minimum, not because he wasn't talented, but because he had this history. Tennis, on the other hand, has elected not to do what baseball at that time did do, and they're reaping the repercussions of it right now. You've got a fan base around the world that is upset now with how your marquee tournament for the sport just ended this summer. They're gonna have to do something, and they're gonna have to do it fast if they want the semblance of relevance that they still have and are maintaining because of Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner to remain.
I don't think they're gonna do anything. I think they consider it a closed issue at this point. That's the sense I get. And look, you have to be careful, you know. And lest I have to remind you of this, I think you're smart enough to know this on your own. But I think I have to remind people at home: the loudest voices are often the minority. So if you're looking at social media and people are all screaming and bent out of shape, generally that tends to be a smaller number than the actual whole in the general sports fan. And what tennis needs are the general casual sports fans like me, who only watch 4, maybe 5 events a year. They need me to tune in. They need people like me to tune in. I think those people are tuning in regardless of the stuff you're talking about, because on most of these broadcasts, they're barely touching on, and that's another issue altogether, they barely even talk about the Sinner doping issue. They barely even talk about the Swiatek, bust with her getting in trouble. One thing I have to say on the Swiatek thing: she beats Anisimova in straights, which you could kind of see coming, but I don't know if anybody could have seen 6-love, 6-love coming. And that was, I mean, just bonkers how well and how big Swiatek played in that spot. And Anisimova, I feel for Amanda Anisimova, because I don't know how you come back from this. And I tweeted this out on Saturday. I don't know how mentally you're able to wrap your head around that and just put it away and bury it in a lockbox, a mental lockbox somewhere, and it doesn't constantly creep up on you that you got bageled on the biggest stage in tennis with an opportunity of a lifetime. It's one thing to lose. It's another thing to get bageled the way she did in that match, Sam, real quick.
Yeah, it was a dominant performance from Iga on Saturday. Ooh,
she was.
Wish it would have been clean.
It was dominant no matter how you look at it. I mean, she was just fantastic. And as was pointed out by Chrissy Evert and the people on the broadcast team, she hasn't even mastered the grass court game yet. She's got 6 slams at the age of 24, and she's got plenty more coming, and we're coming back. We welcome you back to this Monday edition of Sports Wrap. We usually have this guy on Wednesdays to talk NBA, but seeing as we're running special programming Tuesday through Friday this week, I said, let's get him on today. Do one last hurrah before Summer League concludes and he rides off into his summer sunset, which will last about 5 minutes for him, right? I mean, is there how much downtime will you have between the end of Summer League and like when you have to really get into it again? Kurt Heelan, by the way, pro basketball talk at NBCSports.com is joining us from a hotel room in Las Vegas here for the Summer League.
It's not going to end that much just because, like, Luka Doncic is extension eligible on August 2nd, but he's not going to sign then because he's still going to be playing in the Euros, and he doesn't want to deal with that probably till he gets back, so it might be September. So that'll be fun. Because Laker fans will deal well with the delay. That won't freak them out at all.
He'll only come back on with us when LeBron gets traded or Giannis signs.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's about it. That's about the only other two like big shoes, right? Potentially drop.
It's all gonna. There's stuff that's gonna happen this summer, but it always does. So.
All right. Fair enough. What won't be happening is Cooper Flagg playing again in the Summer League. His time apparently is done after 2 games. And I don't think that's nothing out of the ordinary when you're talking about the top pick in the draft. Didn't Wemby only play? Did Wemby play only 2 games as well?
Wemby played 2. Most of the stars have only played 1 or 2. That's pretty common for the top couple of picks. Usually they just get them out there, get their leg, you know, see what it looks like in the system. But at some point, especially with the way Flagg played in his second game, the risk of injury for those guys versus what they're learning and gaining from this is just the risk reward doesn't pay off anymore.
No, it doesn't. All right. You watched him for 2 games. What were your impressions? Now, first you're supposed to say, I don't do impressions, but tell me what your impressions were of Cooper Flagg.
I will do this in my Al Pacino voice. No. Look, he is as advertised. And I think we'd all seen that. He is a high motor, high energy. Like, he was making defensive plays. His ball handling and shot creation is improving. He is going to impact games starting as a rookie. Like, he is going to, he's the clear front runner for rookie of the year. And with reason, he's going to put up a lot of shots. They can put the ball in his hands at points. But what was really impressive was the moments he was working off ball, which will be more, you know, certainly happen a lot more when you're playing with D'Angelo Russell and eventually, you know, Kyrie Irving. His ability to work off ball and get open shots and knock down looks and just hustle and cut and run in transition is going to be huge. And the only question remains, like, his jump shot's got to be more consistent. He was 5 of 21 in the first game. He was getting the shots. He just wasn't knocking them down. That's what's going to take a little time with him, but I'm not worried about him getting there.
What was the reaction from fans? There were a lot of dignitaries, celebrities sort of watching. Did you get the sense of awe, and how do you compare it with like a Wemby and sort of his debut and what we saw with him versus Flagg?
The Flagg one both of them sold out the building. There were a lot of people there. A lot of people there, much more international feel last year for Wemby, although Hanson Yang is doing that this year with.
I love him. God, I love him.
but this game also had Bronny. So you got the whole Laker, like that building was sold out and full from the start because everybody wanted to see this game that frankly, you know, it ended up being the Ryan Nemhard's game. Like he was the guy who was the best player on the floor, a little 6 foot Gonzaga guard. Well, 6 foot's generous. Yeah, he's not 6 foot, but it's going to be, it was hyped like that. The other one that comes to mind was how big the Zion, like when Zion played in summer league, it was nuts. And he didn't even play a full game before they pulled him and he was injured, which portended something, I guess.
mentioned Yang, by the way, and we've heard the, you know, Chinese Jokic, like that sort of thing. I got to be honest, in some of the highlights I'm seeing, I'm seeing it.
Absolutely. Portland fans have already like basically told Donovan Klingon to get a realtor. It's not fair. Cause like, I will say this, he is fun to watch. He is engaging. And you can see the other players realize they were actually playing slightly higher level basketball than some of the other teams because you don't get a lot of passing and cutting necessarily. It's in summer league. You don't have that kind of connection, but a couple of guys, especially guys with some experience, realized if I make this cut,
He's going to find me. Yeah.
And suddenly guys were moving off the ball and doing stuff in summer league you don't normally see. He's got work to do. He is not strong enough. His defense is not close to good enough. But you could see where the potential is for I hate to use Jokic, but Jokic in the sense of – because he's not going to be that good. But Jokic in the sense of a guy you can – a center you can use as a hub.
Will he get real minutes in his rookie year, or are they going to baby him?
I've got a feeling it's going to be babying at first. But that's a young – look, that is not a good team up in Portland. They are not competing for anything. So I think you're going to roll him more minutes and more minutes as he gets more comfortable. But like I said, a lot of the work he's got to do, frankly, is in the gym and off the court. He has got to get stronger. His athleticism isn't where it needs to be. And so – that stuff you've got to work on, but you roll him into the season and you can't, like I said, you can run some stuff through him and that's going to be fun to watch.
What did we learn about Dylan Harper?
Boy, he's fluid athletically. Not much. I mean, we've only seen him in one game as of us talking. He hasn't played that much, but fluid athletically, could get to the rim, still kind of, but looked like a guy in his first game at that level, just trying to kind of find his footing after being out, you know, injured and a little bit rusty.
Who's been the biggest surprise of summer league so far?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yang might be there. I mentioned before Ryan Nemhard, who was like, 6 foot nothing, you know, undersized guard out of Gonzaga. The question, he can't score. Well, he scored 28 in his first game. He knows how to run a team. Like you look at, it's fun to see guys like that. And suddenly you're like, man, he's probably going to be a career backup, but it's fun to see like the guy kind of step into his own.
What does the rest of summer league look like here in the final 30 seconds? You know, for a lot of these guys, when you have a lot of the stars that they start to pull back because you don't want anybody getting hurt. What does the rest of summer league look like here?
You're looking at the guys way down the bench, guys who are going to get two ways and G League contracts. And frankly, a lot of guys who will be playing in Europe next year getting minutes, but you start to, it's a chance for some of these guys to get some run and stand out and catch an eye and get a two-way contract when maybe they wouldn't have.
Last one, real quick, in the last 10 seconds here. Biggest buzz, non-summer league related, around NBA writers when it came to the league right now. What would you say it is?
Everybody's still talking about LeBron and is he leaving? Is he staying? Is he going? And it pretty quickly turns to shrugs because the answer is he's probably not going anywhere. But
all right. Kurt Heelan, always appreciate him. Coming up in 10 minutes, another win for SVG, Shane Van Gisbergen. We'll get to that with Brian Twining, who was in Sonoma yesterday for the road course race there. Get his thoughts on that. Let's talk some golf. And I'm talking it today because, again, programming note, we will not be here on Tuesday through Friday. I mean, the show will be on, but we won't be doing our usual daily show. We'll be running best ofs and things like that because we are taking the rest of the week off with the MLB All-Star break going on. As good a week as any to to recharge the battery a little bit, take a few days off. So Sammy Arnell, I said, let's do some golf today. A wild finish in the LPGA Tour in one of their majors, the Amundi Evian Championship. By the way, I didn't know what Amundi was until I went and looked it up today. Do you know what Amundi is? I bet you don't. Nope. See, it's a VC. It's like a VC, like an investment company in France, I think, something like that. I know. I didn't even know. Congratulations to them. So Grace Kim, Sam Yarnell.
I don't really know what Evian is.
No, come on. Everybody knows what Evian is. How about Grace Kim? I mean, and somebody pointed this out. You sent this to me yesterday. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have even seen it. Because again, if somebody did this on the PGA Tour, it'd be everywhere, especially in a major. But it happened on a women's LPGA event, so it doesn't get as much traction. Because for all the success in women's sports, can I get on my soapbox for 1 second? I'm going to. For all the success of women's sports and the rising of tides, as it may be, in women's sports, the one sport where it just isn't rising is women's golf in terms of the attention and the focus. And I don't know about the money, you know, how the payouts are and all that stuff and TV ratings and all those things. But the shot Grace Kim hit yesterday to force a playoff in a major was just out of this world. And then she goes on in the playoff and wins. So congratulations to Grace Kim, Sam. On winning the major.
An unbelievable performance from Grace Kim. I'll get into that in a second. I will say, though, on the topic of women's golf, let me remind you of last year when Nelly Korda went on that insane winning streak, almost parallel to Scottie Scheffler, and we were, like, it was a story in the sports world. So I will say that maybe not as much, but women's golf has felt the rising tide lifting all ships in women's sports to an extent. Maybe not to the extent that Caitlin Clark has raised women's basketball, but, you know, women's golf is still getting more coverage, I would say, than women's softball is.
Well, women's softball is probably the only other one that isn't. And that league, that Athletes Unlimited league that they just launched. But I think we need to ask the question why women's golf isn't getting the attention. And that's a whole different conversation where we need to bring a lot of people in.
That's a layered onion that we don't need to peel today.
And there'd be a lot of tears like when you peel an onion. If we really start having that conversation, there will be people that get offended. There will be people that are not happy about some of the things that are said about it. But there are some realities to why women's golf has not gotten the traction that it should be getting in this period where women's sports really is starting to drive the bus in so many ways. All right, that being said, congratulations to Grace Kim. Move away from that. Open Championship this week. And, I mean, I'm always pumped to talk a little bit about one of the oldest traditions in golf. And Scottie Scheffler, your Open Championship favorite, at plus 450, Sam Yarnell, with Rory McIlroy at plus 700 coming off a runner-up at the Scottish Open this weekend. John Rahm then comes in at 12-1, followed by Bryson DeChambeau and a whole list of others. The Open Championship this weekend, Sam Yarnell.
Yeah, let me just tell you this right now. If you're trying to bet Lynx Golf and you're looking for me to give you a winner right here, it's not going to happen. Should Scottie Scheffler win it? Is he the best golfer in the world? Yes, it's not particularly close. Is he going to? Probably not.
Nope.
Did you see what happened in Scotland last weekend? It'll be incredibly fun to watch. I can't wait. But will I be putting my hard-earned American money down on anybody because I have confidence in anybody? No shot. If you did make me play somebody, let's go all the way down to the bottom. George Bloor. George B-L-O-O-R. I don't know. It's the name closest to the bottom that sounds as like English, Irish, Northern Irish as possible.
Royal
so
portrait.
I'll go with George Bloor at 100-1. No, that's 1,000-1. Sorry. So my $1 bet on George Bloor will get me a cool 1,000 back. I'll save my other dollar and maybe I'll put it on John Axelson, who's also at 100-1. That's kind of my point, is that you have no idea who's going to win this tournament. I have no idea who's going to win this tournament. The people running the tournament have no idea who's going to win this tournament. It's all just a crapshoot when you get across the pond.
Royal Portrush, by the way, the host site this year. Give me Guido! Give me Guido Migliozzi! Anytime you got a Guido in the field, as a half Italian over here, I'm saying give me Guido! Plus 100,000, baby. Let's go. I'm all about that. Give me Guido.
We'll get involved. Hao Tong Lee, 500-1.
Sure. Why not? All kidding aside, if somebody gave me money and said, like, bet it on somebody and be serious about it, I'll take Rory. Give me Rory at 7-1. I'll go there. Let's talk some NASCAR. Brian Twining's going to join us. Get some thoughts with him on Shane Van Gisbergen's latest victory. That's next. Coming up in 10 minutes, we wrap it up with odds and ends. The MLB draft, we have to get into that with Sam Yarnell. He follows that. I only follow it when it's time to get their baseball cards. And then we'll be joined by Sam to talk about Juwan Jennings in the news as well. 49ers wide receiver. Interesting story out of San Francisco. We'll get that coming up as well. But now we talk some NASCAR on a Monday with our friend Brian Twining, Bleacher Nation. He does a great job on NASCAR. He was in Sonoma this weekend for the Cup Series race. And what do you know? Shane Van Gisbergen wins again on a road course, Brian. It is his third win of the season. He joins a few other drivers that have won three times. The difference is he's done them all on road courses. You were there. What stood out about this one versus the others?
Shane Van Gisbergen is not human on road courses compared to the rest of the field. His skill level is immeasurably better than everybody else. Wow. On this track type. And drivers are also commenting about how it's basically a race for second at this point when we go to road or street courses, just kind of expecting Shane to be able to run out front. And you saw it numerous times during the race where it seemed as if he was kind of lollygagging out front. Wow. And then when guys would make a push to get closer to him, it's almost like he would look out the back window, say, all right, hold my beer, and go 4 to 5 tenths faster than the next fastest guy on track. Like he was barely trying.
Is it like the tush push in a car? You just can't stop it. Like, I mean, what is it that allows him in this particular discipline to be so much better than everybody else? When we know he's just basically an average driver on the ovals.
Yeah, look, I'm not a car expert by any means. I don't pretend to be, but you know, drivers and analysts and one of the most prominent voices in the sport, Dale Earnhardt Jr., have talked about his usage of the pedals, especially the clutch, which is not used in today's NASCAR Cup Series racing, but the way that he utilizes it to carry speed and not lose momentum in and out of corners, it just guys in the Cup Series didn't grow up doing that. You know, they don't do the heel toe brake gas pedal thing that Shane has been shown doing, which he actually told him to stop showing it on the in-car camera because it's such an advantage for him and something that Cup Series drivers just don't do.
Will he be a minus number in the next road course race? Have we gotten to that point where he almost goes to which you never see in NASCAR? Yeah. I mean, is he going to be a minus number?
Look, I thought going into Chicago that there was a chance that we were going to see him close to even. And then this week, the fact that he opened up at what was expected to be the number post-qualifying, had he put it on the pole, and he was around, I saw as short as plus 110 wow. before we went green. I think there's a world and there's going to be a book out there that just says, screw it. We're going to post him at minus 110, which is essentially like an even side bet on a team sport where there's only two participants.
Yeah. It's remarkable. What are other drivers saying at this point? You know, because we're talking about a guy who's basically, he's basically final eight at this point when you talk about the playoffs. Are drivers just saying the right things in terms of, hey, he's earned his way in? Are they saying something else privately? How are the drivers reacting to what he's doing right now and what it means for the playoffs?
Yeah, I think on the peripherals, like drivers are giving him his flowers, but I would have imagined there's a lot of frustration going on that he's able to kind of monopolize the schedule the way that it is. When, you know, you do look back to last year, though, Joey Logano, he essentially did the same thing. Like he was just kind of farted around in the middle of the field all year, and then he got wins at the most opportune times to advance throughout the playoffs. And that's essentially what Trackhouse is doing with Shane in the car. I mean, three wins, he's almost locked in, as you said, to the round of eight without even having to win the Roval in the playoffs. And so, yeah, you know, drivers appreciate his talent on road courses, but there is a little frustration in the fact that he's able to do that without being a contender per se on the ovals.
Could something change? Could they get him to a point where he is competitive in the ovals by the time we get to the postseason, that he's actually a risk, you know, for Vegas, for people who may have bet him to win the whole thing at the end of the year? Is there something that could change between now and then?
Yeah, I think 100%. I mean, just when you look at the quick progression of this year, his rookie season, first full-time year in the Cup Series car, he's gotten better. I want to say like each like quarter or each segment of the season. I mean, every couple of races, you see him improve on the oval a little bit. He's gotten really good at super speedway racing because he's running up front pretty frequently in that discipline. And then he's running in the 20s here on the ovals and the intermediates, which is better than what he showed in his first few appearances. So as the season goes on, if they can figure out a way to just get points in stages and maybe get off cycle of, you know, at the end of these stages and kind of operate like they are road courses and take stage points, it really won't matter how he comes home at the end of the day at the finish. It'll be the fact that he's able to just get points and advance that way.
All right. Four guys on the inside of the bubble without wins. Tyler Reddick, Chris Buescher, Alex Bowman, Bubba Wallace. Bubba just inside by a few points. Ryan Preece just outside by a few points, obviously, here. What do you see as most important for Dover next week when it comes to that playoff push?
Well, the whole charter situation going on with 2311 and Front Row is probably going to weigh pretty heavily on that team and Bubba going forward here. And I think that gives the leg up to Ryan Preece, who may be the most surprising performer so far this season. I mean, consistently coming home in mid-teens, high, low teens. So, yeah, it's going to be tough for Bubba to get in there.
Always appreciate it, Brian Twining. Appreciate you. We'll see you next week.
Take it easy, Jason.
All right, just about time to put the wraps on this baby for a Monday. Again, programming note. Tuesday through Friday this week, Sports Wrap Best Of shows. Special programming throughout the week with the MLB All-Star Game and All-Star Break taking place. Thought it was a good time for us to recharge our batteries. We take very few days off during the course of a year if you actually pay attention and watch the show. Often you notice we're very rarely off. So we will be taking this week to recharge the battery a little bit. Sam, what will you be? The question is, Sam Yarnell, how will you be using your time off over the course of the week? That's the question.
Probably take a nap.
That's it. Just going to take a nap.
Maybe I'll try and play some golf.
There you go.
But definitely nap. That's it.
That's all you got. Just nap.
You know, because you know why? Because everyone looks at this as a vacation and everyone's thinking, oh, Sam, you don't have to do the show for 3 days, 4 days this week. What are you probably going to, you know, go to the tropics, do something fun? Yeah, well, guess what, folks? Next week, training camp starts and I haven't done a lick of football prep yet. So I got to go team by team, division by division, and break down every single one and look at all of them. So that's where I'll be spending my next 4 days, right here, just with the life light off and the screen lit up with football stuff instead of Jason's face.
There you go. That's a good thing. All right. Couple of reminders real quick. If you have not subscribed to the Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast, it's the audio version of this show delivered daily to your favorite podcasting platform. Free to subscribe. 45 minutes and a nice little bow, commercial free every day. Sports Wrap with Jason Page, the YouTube channel. If you have not subscribed to that yet, go and do so. It's growing fast. We have Sports Wrap shorts there. And especially this week, where we will not be doing our usual daily show, if there is any breaking news, we will have reaction to it on the Sports Wrap with Jason Page YouTube channel with our Sports Wrap shorts. Make sure to go there and subscribe if you have not already done so. And without any further delay, ladies and gentlemen, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. The Major League Baseball draft was held yesterday. I know you're a Nationals fan. What did you think of their pick? What did you make of the first round? You pay attention to this far more than I do. I only pay attention when it's time to buy their baseball cards and Bowman first cards come out. So go ahead.
Get your Eli Willits cards now.
All right.
A lot of people were surprised that the Nationals took Eli Willits, the shortstop out of Oklahoma, as the first overall pick. It has come to my attention in the hours since the draft that he was not only the number one prospect on the Nationals big board, he was the number one prospect on at least two other major league clubs' big boards. So I don't think, as much as there seems to be a narrative of this new regime, the Nationals firing their GM so that they could bring in whoever the ownership wanted to save money in the draft and whatever, doesn't really seem like it's going to be the case. It does seem like the Nationals, maybe against beliefs of some popular baseball journalists, I'm looking right at you, Ken Rosenthal, if you can see this right now, are ready to compete as soon as next year. And this is a franchise that is built to win, despite, again, what a lot of people want to write columns about. So the first overall pick to me, not a huge surprise. I actually reached out to FanDuel because they didn't have a number posted on Eli Willits to be the first overall pick. And they had Cade Anderson minus 700 to be the first overall pick. So I reached out to FanDuel yesterday and said, hey, could you guys post an Eli Willits number? I'd love to get a wager in on it. And they said, we actually already looked into this. We can't post it because the kid's not 18 yet. They drafted a 17-year-old, and you can't bet on 17-year-olds.
How interesting.
Just a funny little thing there. I a lot of people were confused as to why his name was nowhere in the odds to be the first overall pick.
That is interesting.
There's a little explanation as to why. Otherwise, I thought the draft was, outside of the second overall pick with the Angels, pretty chalky. No one saw the second overall pick. That blew up every single mock draft in the book. Great to see Ethan Holliday go to Colorado, obviously with the history of Matt Holliday there.
Yep.
The Baltimore Orioles were my sleeper team yesterday. They picked up a shortstop in competitive balance A round, the Golden Spikes winner, Wahila Aloy. I have a feeling that the Baltimore Orioles are going to explore the trade possibilities of Gunnar Henderson as we approach the deadline. Ooh. That was my Windhorse fingers moment. Why are they drafting a major league ready shortstop if Gunnar Henderson's already on that team? Obviously one RBR left. I think that the Orioles might explore it. And then the one that everyone talked about, the Cade Anderson signing with Seattle. Reports are that he's signing for $800,000 under slot value. This is a guy who was projected to go number one overall. There's something weird going on with Cade Anderson, but if any organization can figure it out, it's the Seattle Mariners.
By the way, talk about writing on the wall for Anthony Volpe. Yankees drafted another shortstop. They already have George Lombard in the organization. Something tells me Anthony Volpe ain't going to be a Yankee that much longer. Odds and ends, Juwan Jennings may be the end for him in San Francisco with the Niners, scheduled to make $7.5 million this year. The wide receiver says, I want a new contract or trade me. Sam, we've seen this now a couple of times within the Niners organization. It kind of makes you wonder, what's going on there?
Yes, but it's Juwan Jennings. Like, this is a head scratcher. I get it from Deebo Samuel. It made sense. He was, for a large portion of multiple years, the heartbeat of their offense. Juwan Jennings has like two good games a season, Jason.
Last year, 77 catches, 975 yards, and six touchdowns. So somebody will find value in it. We got to go. best of the rest of the week. Thanks to Kurt Hillen and Brian Twining. We'll see you later.